Hello and welcome back to yet another episode of Brain Pops, approaching mental and physical challenges behind the scenes of professional sports with your usual hosts. Yeah, he's here since 50 episodes. It's amazing. Episode 50 and he's still not, like, he's still doing this and he's still getting guests and he's still preparing and he's still asking great questions. I'm glad that he's here again. Dominic Teodoro. Hey, what's up, Dom?
Hey, Leonard. How's it going? Yeah, it's crazy. 50 episodes. But, you know, like I said at the end of last episode, I think I have to bring it up one more time. I'm not tired of you. I like still like listening to you. And, you know, that makes me think that you're a keeper, and I think you are. And to all the women out there, just want to let you know one more time, Leonard is a keeper, and I'm happy that I'm doing this with him.
Okay, thank you for helping me out in the women's world also. episode 50, and like I said in the intro, you are usually responsible for getting our guests, but this time for episode 50, I was like, yeah, I got somebody real good, real special. He's a really good friend of mine, and I know him since, yeah, it's already like above 10 years, I think. It's crazy. He used to be my coach in the under 14 or under 16 or something, because he is, his name is Dwayne Anderson, obviously, as the title says, and he used to play in Göttingen when I was a young gun, and he coached me when I was really young, and we stayed in touch ever since. And yeah, he had a, how do you say, blossomful career as a player. And when he quit, he was still the third most efficient player of the BBL. And then he started his coaching career at Penn State, and now he is at Villanova. So a lot of good reasons to talk to him. Player's perspective, coaching perspective, recruiting processes. Also, we can get a little bit deeper into the college basketball and the whole, let's say, business around behind it. Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to this episode.
And there's one special thing about him.
What else?
He quit playing basketball at the age of 26.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm still, like, back in the day, I just did not understand what he was doing. By now, I kind of get why he did it, but that's definitely going to be a question, yeah.
And the other thing is, with coaching you back then, he obviously didn't succeed, but yeah.
Man, you don't know how far I would have made it without him.
All right, Poppies, yeah. let's get to it.
Yeah, let's get the show on the road. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Later.
All right, and here we are, live in the episode. Dwayne, it's so good to have you here. Finally, at episode 50, you made it on the podcast.
the anniversary episode.
Yeah, happy 50th anniversary. And I feel honored and privileged to join you guys, and especially my little German brother, I like to call him.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's a pleasure to have you here, man. Appreciate it. Yeah. So how do we start? Like, we were already talking about it in the pre-show and kind of introduced you, you know, your stations and everything. And I think we have a lot of BG fans listening to us. And I guess they lost track of you whenever you went to Italy. And then they probably followed you when you were still in Würzburg. But then, if I'm correct, that's after that season, you decided to take your talents elsewhere, let's say. And so I think we got to pick them up there a little bit. What happened there, since you were the, like I said, third most efficient player in the league, man.
you always had those stats when I played back for Göttingen, as far as the plus minus being effective. So that's pretty cool. And yeah, the time at Göttingen was absolutely amazing. Playing in that country my first year. But just the fans, how insane and out of the mind, like from little kids to older, like it was from start to finish. It was one of the greatest experiences I've had college basketball. And I've been, playing basketball in my entire life, my career, professionally, college wise, as a young, that environment was something special. And I will always remember playing for Göttingen for 2 years. Then, like you said, I went to Italy, played professionally, And then I came back and finished, played in Würzburg for a year. And then I think this, you know, I have a family now. I have two boys. They turned 4 and 6 this month, actually. But I had a beautiful, my girlfriend at the time, we've been together for, I met her my freshman year in college. And then we were, you know, she went to school and we thought it was just time for, you know, for us together that I retire, which sometimes I look back like, what was I thinking? And you were not happy at all.
No, I remember that. I was not happy.
Yeah, I retire at the age of 26 to be a coach. So the last, that was 2018. So the last few years I was coaching at Penn State University for 5 years, came back to Villanova. Now I believe this is going on my 4th season. So not playing basketball professionally, but still involved with basketball and love absolutely coaching and trying to help the younger kids, be successful in basketball and in life.
Hmm. And how was that back then? The chance of you becoming an assistant coach at the Penn State University, this was a chance that just presented itself, or how was that?
So when I was at Villanova, there was a gentleman on our staff that we were close when I played there. He started as a director of basketball operations, then became an assistant coach and moved up very fast because we had a lot of success. And at Villanova, if there's a lot of success, he grooms a lot of young coaches to become head coaches. So him and I, we just stayed in contact, and Coach Wright and this other coach always knew that I wanted to be a coach. So we stayed in contact, and he emailed me during that season in Würzburg, basically saying he had a video coordinator job for me. Would I be interested? I'm like, video coordinator? Like, no way. Like, the contract that I was about to sign, I think I was actually pretty close to signing with a team in the BBL for as a 3-year deal. It was very good money. Leonard is very familiar with this situation.
Yes. I'm not mad, but yeah, no. my heart still bleeds sometimes.
So then I was like, no, like, I'm not retiring to become a video coordinator. So then he followed back with me a few months, said, what about be assistant coach? I'm like, nah, but that's what I wanted to do. So I was going to get the experience. Him being a very intelligent coach himself, knew that he was going to try to sell me. So I was at home, actually. So as soon as I left overseas, I went back home. And he was like, won't you come interview? I'm like, of course. Like, I would love to interview, go through the process, and know exactly the questions and the process when I eventually do retire, which was, I was thinking, years from then.
Yeah.
So I did that. I hopped in a car, got a suit, drove down to Penn State. Lindsay and I, she was on my interview with me the entire time. And I just fell in love with just the atmosphere, the college town. I got into the business with everyone on that staff I knew prior to Villanova, so I knew that I wasn't just jumping into something with just random people. They knew it. I would need a lot of help, and they would help guide me. And Penn State was beautiful. You visited me at Penn State, right?
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah, so that place was special. So he did a good job of selling me on retiring early. So that's how Penn State happened. And that's how the opportunity of me coaching at an early age happened.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I'm happy for the players that you coach now, because I got the experience, let's say, and there you still for sure were just a professional player 100% and not even coaching. And I already learned so much from you. So I was happy for the players that got you as a assistant coach for sure. But at the same time, I was like, 26, supposedly, like, your best time is around 28, 29, 30. That's when you hit your prime. And I was like, oh my, like, I want to see this happening. Like, I wanted, you know, like, I loved your style of play. And I'm sure we're going to get into this a little bit.
And also, Leonard, what I wanted to add here, I mean, the guy who recruited you, he must have seen something special in you without you being able of showing yourself as an assistant coach, right?
Yeah, like I was the captain of my teams. I was always like the guy that everyone come to in the locker room if there was any issues, late phone calls of, you know, helping other teammates out as a player. So the coaches always kind of felt this about me. Even when I played it professionally, I was kind of like the the I always try to live a certain way and be a role model, but also by putting in the extra work, showing up, being the first one in the gym, being the last one in the gym. So like when I, cause I like to, I'm going to get after you. Like if you're not competing at a high level, I'm going to let you know, like I want every rebound and I want you to have the same mentality and approach. So if I can't, you know, hold someone accountable if I'm not doing that for myself. So, that's something I take pride on as far as, and just as a person in life, like I just try to do everything all out. And, I remember going through this process. Leonard, he probably is not aware of this, that he had a, Lindsay was more so do it. She put it on me. And Leonard was like, are you like, you're an all-star. Like, what are you thinking? Like, no. So you were so close to having me, really not retire. Just, I don't know if you know that, but
I gave it all I had, man. That was the main mission of me for that whole summer, trying to keep you to play.
another quick thing I'll add to the Göttingen fans that are listening. My first year in Göttingen, I had a great year that year. Was around great players. We just had a reunion. Matter of fact, not too long ago, most of us were on a call together.
The 2010 team, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was contemplating on as far as what my next move would be the next season. And my little brother, he had him and the team was not very talented. Great kids, not very talented basketball wise. they sent me this amazing, like birthday video.
Oh yeah. 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 I remember we did that. Oh yeah. We were so proud.
Amazing birthday video. And I've never seen Leonard have so much emotion. So, that's also, he played a huge part. You should probably got some money from Göttingen for that. He had a huge part of me, you know, not really testing the market and going back to Göttingen, because I just felt like it was home. And I was away from my family, you know, so it made me feel like home.
Oh, that's a beautiful story. I didn't even know that, or didn't even remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. So what you just explained when Dom asked you, what do you think these coaches see or saw in you that they want you to become a coach? I think when I saw you here in Göttingen, obviously, but also I visited you in Würzburg and Penn State, I feel like the relationships you have with people are always very, there's a lot of trust in there. And like you said, somebody, like, I think a lot of people would call you late at night if they have tough times because they know they can. What do you think is that people start trusting you and you can build a relationship with them so quickly?
Oh man, to be honest, I'm not sure how to explain it. But I am a firm believer on, you come across certain people in life that you touch, and you have no idea how you can impact their life or how they impact you. So I try to, you know, treat everyone kind, on the court, not so much. I try to tell myself I'm the toughest player. I'm one of my favorite videos, I mean pictures from one of the games overseas was going against, there was this amazing player that played for, I can't remember the name of the team, but he was John Bryant. He was the MVP several times.
Yeah. He's still playing, yo. He's
still in the league, huh?
Still in the league.
Wow. Yes. But I remember, like, there's a picture of, I think something happened, and then he like towers over top of me, and I'm looking at him in his face like, I'm not backing down. So I just try to have this approach in relationships, because I believe in karma. Like, you never know what's going to happen in the future. If you treat someone the wrong way, they'll remember that. And I don't want to be that type of individual.
Well said. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think you already also touched on it, because I was about to ask you, what do you think made you a successful player? But earlier, you already mentioned that, you know, that you always wanted to be the hardest worker, that you always wanted to put all the hard work in. Is there something besides to that would fit you?
I just am a competitor. Like, I don't know. There's something in me that just ticks that I just very self motivated. I'm self driven. My favorite player is Kobe. So I just kind of have that, like, you got to go all out. You only live once. So attack, like, and I come from, you know, I don't know where I would be without basketball, my parents sacrificing. So, like, why not? There's a saying I like to use. Why not use basketball and don't let basketball use you? I mean, I played in Germany. I played in Italy. I saw the world because of this little round object. And you touch so many people's lives and went over to Germany, barely ate, like, I don't like a lot of food, went over there. Like, it's just so many
I remember
things,
that.
So many things that that happens in life, and just trying to be that, you know, a competitor and everything. It's just always been something that I've kind of took pride in.
So last week we had a player on here, Devin Hall, who, and he, like, one of our brain pops, or mine, one of my brain pops in this episode was that, to me, it sounded like Devin had a clear vision on who he is besides basketball. As much as he loves the game and wants to be competitive and how much effort he puts in, like, he could describe very well who he is off the court. And he also, and with you, I also saw this, like, you had projects and dreams and stuff besides just being a player. Like, I remember Roby Rock Out BU was one of your projects when you were in Würzburg, I think it started. And do you think that also helped you to like have a clear mind and to focus on that? But if it's maybe not going as well, that you always know that you can rely on, like, who you are family wise and stuff?
Yeah, it's a good question, a good point. That actually, one of my best friends I still talk to today, him and I just came up with that term, you know, Roby Rock Out BU. It was like, all right, let's put this on t-shirts, like, joking around. And then it became a thing. And that's also like, all right, let's do it. But, like, if we're going to do it, let's go all out. So we went all out. I had some big time meetings. It was in a few stores in Germany. Mm. I had a whole website. And I had a lot of time overseas. if I wasn't in the gym, I was working on that. So, yeah, that's just who I am as a person, that I just want to just attack everything. You know, relationships, basketball, just be competitive, whatever it is.
Because I always see this, what you said earlier, like, Kobe being your favorite player, super motivated. I'm like, yeah, that's good. You need that. But also, like, you need to be smart with it, let's say.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's not the only thing. Like, motivated, okay, but a lot of people are motivated.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Okay. Dom, do you want to get into a little bit more into the... what Dwayne is doing right now, or you still have something more in the playing part, let's say?
No, let's go a little bit into the direction of you being an assistant coach.
Yep.
Yeah.
First of all, maybe just start us off, what are, like, you know, when you prepare for a game, what are your main tasks, let's say, or not also in the preparation for the game, but also maybe afterwards, maybe also, yeah, your task during a game.
Preparing for a game, like, actually, I'm preparing for a game next week, this binder, is that I try to watch the flow of the game, get a feel for, I have, like, this joke, like, I want to, by the time I'm done, I want to be that coach for that team. When they like to sub, when they like to switch to zone, so I try to do that. And then on the personnel part, as far as the players and the plays, I try to focus on their tendencies, or how they like to score. So certain things like that. And I'm very, the term is OCD. Is that you guys familiar?
Obsessive compulsive disorder.
It is crazy. Like, I want, after a game, I would like, you know, this, I want, when my first scout is over, the next scout, I want it handed to me. This binder, I have, like, crazy things. I have crazy color codes. So I try to be as detailed as possible, because playing the game at a high level, but teaching it is a challenge. So I try to, not a lot. There's a lot of great coaches that didn't play. So I want to be one of the great coaches that have played, but also can teach it at a high level as well.
What do you think is key? So, because you already talked about the transfer, it's one thing that you know everything about the opposing team and coach and blah, blah, blah. What do you think is key to like transfer this knowledge to the players so they can actually use it?
I think the key is how you deliver it. You may interpret it a certain way, but you have so many different individuals that take information. But if you can be aware of that, like, some players are very literal. Some players you can just say, you know, one thing. So if you have a balance of knowing the individuals you're coaching and how to push their buttons, how to get them to max out, and not how to deliver a message where they just shut down and have no confidence. And I think by me having these relationships with these individuals, when you get on them in tough situations, they know it's coming from a place where, oh wow, this coach is like wants me to be great, not only just at basketball and life. Like we talk, I have players over the house and we just talk about just certain, like just life things. So I think that's what I kind of try to be a little different.
So the relationship, let's say, is the base, and anything else comes, let's say, on top, to like how to teach them, how to get into them without them losing all of their confidence and stuff.
Right. That's very important to me and how we coach at Villanova. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And so go ahead, Dom.
Yeah. You just said that you really like to prepare for a game, like in great detail, that you just want to be, you know, when there's tip off, you just want to be ready. In terms of that, let's say you prepare in detail, but what about the presentation? What do you present to players? I mean, obviously you cannot present everything to them, but how do you like filter that?
So that's a great question. You have only X amount of time, and what you show them is very important. And then you have to know your head coach. So our head coach, who is a Hall of Fame, one of the best, he's not a believer of, all right, let's memorize every single play. So we have kind of have like concepts. All right, here's a few of their plays. Here's how we're going to try to guard it. But we don't want you to, all right, they say that this play is called two. This is what they do in two. No. Like, have a feel for it. And then your toughness is what's going to make us win those games. And that's how I always try to play. Like, no matter who I was going up against, very talented players, I was going to try to take you out of the game just by being tougher than you and letting you know, like, I'm not going to quit ever. And then so also the presentation to the players is what you show in sequence, in order, is also key to me. How you deliver it in film, where, all right, this kid likes to go left at the end of the game. Like, I want you to know that we're not forcing him one way, because they're great basketball players. But at the end of the game, when it's the most difficult situation, he is going left, and you have to know that so you can take that away. And if he beats you using his right, then we're going to
live with it.
Yeah, we're going to live with that. So these little details of how they like to score, how they like to get into their play is kind of, it's like a, not a game, but it's fun. It's a challenge of trying to observe this, learn this, and then deliver this message to our players, and hopefully they can take this game plan and it be successful in the game.
Also referring to last episodes, I realized that it was a kind of bold statement of mine that I said in Europe it's more you have more a strict game plan, you really try to adapt to the opposing team, as if in college. And that's where I think it's bold, because I never played in college or I have any clue, really. I said, I feel like teams focus more on themselves.
Yes.
Like, this is how we want to play. This is our way. And then we have some tendencies, some plays that we want to you know, be ready for, but we focus on ourselves. Would you agree with that?
I would definitely agree. And there's so many great coaches in both. Like I'm amazed at international coaches and then our style of play over here in the States. Like for the college concept for us at Villanova, we more so focus on doing what we do better than what you do. There's other places and other philosophies where they focus on, all right, if we take this play away, what you're going to do? Like we don't prepare that way. But there, you know, there's always different ways to do things. But yeah, I'm curious to you being, you know, a basketball junkie yourself, as far as like if you had to decide, this is going to be tough question for you, I think. Where would you, like, if you had, what's your favorite NBA team? Like, your dream team?
NBA is tough for me. Well, I like Doncic at the moment, so I go with the Mavs, I guess.
So, if you had your opportunity to coach the Mavs or to coach whatever your favorite international team, what would you decide?
I'm too much of a dreamer. I'd definitely go with NBA versus EuroLeague because I want to see that. That's one of my dreams, like be in some kind of position at one day to like see what's going on there behind the scenes. If you ask me, college versus EuroLeague, that's tough for me. That's really tough.
Interesting.
That's where it gets tough because EuroLeague, like, it's so emotional, but in college also, so it's I would be caught. Then you would have had me. So let's say you guys had a great practice week.
Yeah.
Great scouting. You know, you like, okay, we got them. We know what they're doing. The game plan is clear, but we also know what we want to do. Had a great practice week. And then during the game, for some reason, it's just not there. Like the flow is not coming. Team is for some. It like everybody is trying, but it's not really coming together. I guess you've been in that situation as a player or as a coach.
Right.
What are your Schrauben? Like where do you try to tune so you can turn the ship around? Like what are some of the things you look at then?
We have some amazing leaders where you could look at them or say something to them to try to drive. Also, we also have players that just kind of know, all right, if someone's off, they need to like get them going. And we try to, this is going to sound like I'm just making this up. We try to create these situations in practice. And when a game time comes, say like, listen, like this is what we do. We're going to, like we practice a certain way. Like we're gonna be the toughest. We're gonna, you probably don't remember when I played. No matter any time I fell because of an injury, I always try to pop back up so that you can't see. Like there's we're like robots. Like you're not. But then you say if I try to play and I couldn't play like the next few possessions, I would take myself out. But you're not going to see me go down. We try to mentally prepare these guys every day at practice. So when that time comes in the game, we just saying the same things. All right, here's the game plan. Here's all right. If our game plan doesn't work, then we know we put in everything. We don't try to like say one thing that kind of like makes them switch at the last second. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. Cause, we kind of talked about this and one of my theories was when, especially, and obviously that would be college, young teams, this happens when they're in the slump, let's say, I feel like they get louder. They try to cheer on. They try to be even more positive and let's go. And when I feel like this player we had on here last week, he plays with legends in the EuroLeague, like Sergio Rodriguez, Malcolm Delaney, like a lot of players that, Kyle Hines, you probably might know him.
Yep.
Very experienced. And when I watch those kind of teams, I feel like they get calmer the worse it gets. like, because they just remember. Is that something you try to teach the young players also, or how is your view on that? Would you even say, no, I see something else?
Yeah, my view on that is that we are so, like, we on in practice, we are so hard on these guys. Because when the game comes in the most difficult situation, you're always going to resort back to your bad habits. So we try to create the best habits in practice. So when it comes game time, we're not completely saying something differently. Like, no, like every game is your big game. And you've practiced the hours you put into the gym, and in the summer, you've put yourself in a position. So, all right, if it's not going well, we're not going to panic. Don't change the things that we built to get to this. All right, let's watch film afterwards, and then let's see how to get better the next day at practice. So that's always our approach.
Yeah, okay.
You said earlier on this episode, and also in one former podcast you were on, that as a player, you really enjoyed trying to be the hardest worker all the time.
Yeah.
And I think you... And I wanted to find out, what is it that drives you now in your new profession as an assistant coach? Is it this OCD kind of thing that you want to prepare everything in great detail? Or what is it that you are enjoying the most as an assistant coach?
What I'm enjoying the most as an assistant coach is just trying to be great and sacrifice so that I can help. I have two boys. Live a life, you know. I think as kids, as parents, that's the best challenge there is. That whatever type of growing up you had, you want your kids to do better than you. So I try to. We got back late last night. I go to 2 a.m. I go to sleep. My son is in the bed at 7 a.m. I wake up with him still to show him that. And he's always in here watching film with me, either watching film of his games or scouting, is that to show him the level of work ethic that you can enjoy what you do at a high level. Try to still be the best dad, and just provide so that you can have, you know, you say whatever you want to get into when you're older, whether it's living at the beach or whatever, like you have to, there's a price that comes with that. I take my boys to the beach a lot in the summer, but I want them to show, all right, like this doesn't just happen for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the same work ethic, then you're not going to enjoy this when you get to, you know, to be older. So that's what drives me just to. My parents did an amazing job helping me go to college. First, you know, not a lot of people in my family went to college. So I think this would just drive me, just always trying to be better and to live a certain way.
You think there'll be a point, like, because I think this is very clear that you want, your goal is to be a head coach at one point, right?
Definitely.
For sure.
Definitely, yes.
And do you think there will be a point where you're like, okay, I'm ready? Or do you think it's also going to be a little bit more like your switch from playing to coaching, that it's just going to present itself?
I think, man, I had an interesting conversation with my agent this morning. And I think probably after one more year, I think I'll be ready to possibly start doing interviews. But also, I'm also a firm believer that when you get thrown into the fire, like, my scouts are better now than when I first started. I just think I just need to be put in that situation. And then I evaluate how to get better. And I love that challenge of, like, man, if I approach and knew my scouts now when I did back then, what could I have changed then? So I'm always looking how to get better, how to evolve, not only my position, but the people around me as well. And I've learned that from great, you know, leaders themselves that I've learned from.
Because that's always so, like, the balance of knowing I put in the work and I'm preparing, But at some point also, it's karma, like you said earlier.
You know?
Chances just present themselves. Yeah.
And how much does it help you that you are now working for the same head coach that you played for in your college career? How much is that a help, but does that sometimes also stand in the way, sort of?
To be honest, I don't think it stands in the way at all. I know what it takes to play for, everyone's different. I know what it takes to play for Villanova and what it takes to play for Coach Wright, and certain things that we teach that could be very successful when you leave here, whether it's the NBA, whether it's overseas. And I tell recruits all the time and their families, like, wherever you go, that you're going to have your ups and downs. I have kind of the answers to the test because I played at Villanova. So I know exactly what they're going to go through. I know exactly the down days. I know exactly what it takes to have a certain mentality to be successful. It's a little different because Villanova is now, like, when you could talk college basketball, Villanova's name comes up. So when everyone you go up against, you're going to get their best. So the challenge is a little bit different. But I know, like, but recruiting wise, I know, the certain players, watching them, how they are in huddles, how when they come out the game, if they're just still cheering, if they can be coachable, their skill level, I know what can be successful here. So I think it makes it easier, I believe. And being around other assistants on our staff that have been here for years, and also another assistant that has played here as well, so we know exactly how Coach Wright thinks. So yeah,
I guess that can also help the players, you know, because, you know, players and coaches relationships, sometimes they can be, they say, pissed off at some point or be mad or hurt or whatever, and then it's probably good to have people who know Coach and know exactly what he's looking for. So, yeah, that's another topic we wanted to get into, the recruiting process, because I believe you're still very much into that, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so maybe you can tell us a little bit what you look for in the player when you start scouting to recruit players.
We look for not only basketball-wise, but like I said, so when we go watch a kid play, of course we want him to be talented, be able to make plays, be able to shoot threes. But how he interacts with his teammates, and a hostile environment when the game is going, like, we want to see you on your best day and your bad day. Like, that's, if you have bad body language, I mean, that's just not the Villanova culture. It doesn't matter how good you are. We were like, all right, no. So that's very important for, you know, recruiting. And then because you see these kids, and of course you want to tell them, like, I'm telling you, I see it. If you come to Villanova, this is what can happen. And we get the right kids, you can see the success that Villanova has had over the years. And it's not only because it's the kids, it's because of the families. The moms and dads, we're all on the same page. Like, there's going to be down days, but they trust that Coach Wright has done this for years, and he knows, you know, what it takes to be successful.
Okay. And maybe you can also take us a little bit through this recruiting process, because I remember when I visited you at Penn State, you already touched it. Like, you also get very close to the families and try to build a relationship with that. So, you know, there's trust, especially on the bad days. So with you, we once went to Philly, and that was my first. We were in the hood, basically, back in the day. Me as a Yeah, you guys know how I look. I definitely don't fit there. But maybe...
That's so funny.
Yeah, I still think about that experience a lot. Still very thankful. But maybe you can try to help us or talk to us a little bit about that process, how that is going, because that's not like we scouted you and here's your offer and there you go.
The families are so important because they have been with you all your entire life. And I think about this as a parent. Like, I have two kids, it's 4 and 6. And they are with you every hour. You have to be concerned about what they're doing, what they're eating, what they're drinking, like, in their development as little human beings that come their own personalities. And you're always, all right, when they practice, okay, I got to make sure I can get them to practice. And then all of a sudden they go to college and they're not with you anymore. It blows my mind that. So we try as coaches to let them know, like, you've done an amazing job getting them this to this point. It's time for them to grow up and become men. And you have to trust that we're going to push them on and off the court. You know, of course, we're competitors. We want to win, but we do things a little bit differently. We want you to be a role model. We want you to be a great father, a great husband. We just do things differently, man. And I love that about Villanova. It's different. A lot of other places, they get you just to win games, and then not a lot of the players go back. Like, or they go back, it's just like to an alumni, an event. But we just had in the last few days, we had Jalen Brunson, who plays for the Mavericks, come back to visit. Mikal Bridges just came back to visit. Like, they're in their season, it's All-Star break, and you're taking the time to come back. That goes a long way. It's special.
First of all, I really like what you said about the soft skills when you recruit players. That I think that's also this is a callback to one of our episodes with the NBA scout Francesco Cavalli. He said exactly the same thing. He also said that he likes to watch players and he likes to look at their reaction when their teammate makes a mistake, for example. Yeah. So that goes in the same direction. What you just said, and then the other thing. What I wanted to ask you during recruiting, you back then, you were known for being a player, you know, that always plays hard, a lot of deflections. You throw yourself to the floor whenever you can. I think there's one famous video clip I saw yesterday where you were, I don't know how long you were sliding, but that was a very long slide. What I wanted to ask you, if that is also something you particularly look at, or is that just an add-on?
Oh no, we definitely look at that. If there's there's a term like grit, or there's no if you shy away from the toughness plays, we think we can. If you're a competitor, we think we could bring that more out of you. But like, if you're just afraid to get hit and you fall down and it's like the worst injury of all time, but yet you get back in the game, that's just not toughness is very important, because when it's the game on the line, you're on a roll, the refs are against you, the refs are like playing into the crowd, like, you have to be mentally tough and strong to be better than your opponent and the referees and the crowd. Like, the crowd is just going absolutely insane, you can't hear yourself think, but I'm a competitor, I'm gonna do whatever it takes to win. These little things we try to identify when recruiting.
But those are probably really hard discussions. Where's the border? Where is it too soft or not tough enough?
Yeah.
And then at the same time, he's maybe super talented. And that's probably one of the main discussions you have, I would think,
yeah,
in the recruiting process.
But just like this dialogue, this conversation, you listen to certain things and the details, and you can tell. All right, so who's your favorite NBA player? Like, who do you like to watch? Who do you tell someone is like a gamer or a hooper, or they're just playing the basketball because, you know, they're 6'5" or whatever and talented. Like, no, you gotta love this game, because the people that you're going up against, they love it and they're doing whatever it takes to take you out in the heat of the moment.
So let's say I was a player. You asked me that question earlier. Well, who's my favorite NBA team or player? And I said Luka Doncic. What would that tell you if I was a player you were trying to recruit?
He has this. I can't figure him out. He's like, I think he has a killer mentality. But it amazes me watching him go at his pace, slow motion. I'm like, I feel like I haven't played in years and I can guard him, but of course he would have like 100 points on me. But I admire that and respect that, because like he's into it and he talks and he scores at his own, at will when he wants to. It's remarkable. It's remarkable. Mm-hmm. If you were a center recruiting us and you're a center and I'm recruiting you and you're saying, well, my favorite player is Luka Doncic, I want to be like, that's not kind of like,
yeah, okay, I get it.
Like, who can you see yourself, like, who do you model your, like, for example, me, I love PJ Tucker. I didn't like him going against him.
For sure not.
But like, we kind of have the same similarities as far as how we approach the game, how physical we are, can defend, we can shoot. I can watch this game, I can see how I can improve my, but I'm not watching John Morant and playing like John Morant. That's just not it's just not reality.
Yeah, okay, I get it. So okay, that's something I wanted to talk to you about. So when Luka Doncic came to the league, a lot of Americans were doubting him. You know, there was big doubt. Like, I still love to watch these interviews, and then, you know, I saw Luka play in the NBA. But, you know, there are differences. I see where it's coming from. They also have example, and, you know, NBA and European basketball is just very different.
Yes.
So when you guys, like, but not all of your players in college are going to go to the NBA. Right. Even though that might be always the goal, but it's just not always going to be the case.
Right.
Do you also prepare them for this, let's say, European journey, which would be usually option B if NBA doesn't work out?
For us, we just try to get you to be the best basketball players to make the right plays, out tough anyone, can guard anyone. And then hopefully you take that pedigree and wherever you are, you're successful. Whether you go in the NBA workout, you know that you're going to be able to defend, can be coachable, or you can go overseas and do the same mindset. Like, I always was trying to be the hardest worker, but I also learned a lot of that from Villanova. Like, all right, when I go overseas to Germany, this long plane ride, and then we had a general manager pick me up, and he wants to, you know, he was Villanova excited. No. I want to know who's starting in my position. Like, I want to know who that person is, and I want to let you know that I'm out for blood. I'm trying to take his job one day. And that's just how we are, is we try to prepare you for that. So when you leave here, you can be super successful. And that's why Josh Hart is in the NBA. That's why Jalen Brunson is starting for the Mavs, because they have this, they don't think like your average people. They're the ultimate competitors and very skilled as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have also one thing. I'm just thinking of how I should put this now. You know, I've been working professional basketball in Europe for now, for almost 9 years. And the tendency from my experience, you know, when, for example, when we signed a rookie, like when a player came over, an American player came over to us, having his first rookie season in Germany, a lot of times what I saw was that they were just not ready to live professionally in terms of nutrition. It was just tough for them. Yeah? And I also sometimes had the feeling that they just simply didn't know. And I wanted to ask you, mm-hmm. when I think of colleges, yeah, I always think, you know, I've never been to one, but I always have the feeling that everything is so professional there, and that, you know, that players, once they enter the practice gym, if they need food, they get food, everything is prepared and stuff. But do you have like an explanation of why I could observe it like I just said I did?
Yeah, I think that's a great perspective, and I think that has changed in the landscape of college basketball in probably the last 10 years as far as what you, cause I don't, our meals now, it's absolutely like the best grass fed, the nutrition wise. It wasn't at the level it is. I think it just happens over time. You just get better, you evolve. Leonard and I was joking earlier. I'm a very picky eater, and it's because how I grew up. And I couldn't, I was very nervous going overseas. Different culture, different food. Like, how am I going to survive? Like, I'm going to have to ship boxes of food over to myself. But, you know, you grow up. And now the things that Leonard probably wouldn't even, he would laugh at the things that I eat now, just becoming, you know, older and better and trying to eat healthier. And you can't, I used to eat, I'm embarrassed to say this. When I was a professional basketball player, I had this OCD routine that I would go to Subway and eat like 10 chocolate chip cookies on game day. And I haven't.
What? Wow.
I can't. I'm thinking like, and I used to perform at a
very high level.
I can only imagine if I ate a certain way, what that would have meant for myself and my career. And I was an all-star, I think three out of the four seasons I played. And that's just not even like, but you know, you live and you learn, you get better.
So I heard once on this topic, I don't even remember where I heard it. If it's true, maybe you know better, that when players come to the NBA, they don't really put them on a strict diet, or they're not really onto it. They're like, in the first couple of years, eat whatever.
Well, so certain places,
well, not for whatever.
Yeah. Certain places that have their own chefs and you can pick. But I think it's starting to change, and nutrition is much more important. Like, for example, Kyle Lowry, I forget how many years he's played in the NBA. He now has a chef. Like, his upbringing was very similar to mine. Like, eat whatever. Let's show up to the game, and I'm going to just try to be like a better basketball player than you. Now he's preparing a different way, and you can tell that has helped him last this long, injury-free, knock on wood. Hope I didn't jinx him. Injury-free, USA, like, champion, because all these things matter. But you don't know it, like, just being young and like, all right, I'm going to eat chicken wings and just show up to the game. It's crazy. So I got to decide at what point I want to start teaching this to my sons.
It's going to be a battle, huh? Yeah, but that's like, I agree so much with Dom. You know, I always, you know, I made my living as a player more in the second, third league, where also a lot of rookies come to develop because they might not be ready for higher leagues yet. And there I saw it so much that they came and they would only eat at McDonald's because that was the only thing they knew. And that kind of, like, I think it was always more also like an emotional connection to the States again. So they, because that's food they knew, and it's, they didn't even think about that that's bad for them, or that you basically give your buddy nothing to recover after a game.
Yeah. Like, the first time I walked into I forget the name of, I don't know, but like a doner or a kebab, like, what? There's no... There is no way I'm eating that. Like, the thing, when you walk into the shop, it's up on the, but like, it's just culture, different things. And it's, I love donors now, like kebabs. Absolutely.
Yeah, it takes a while. And I think for a successful European career, that's one of a big thing to, and that's why I was wondering if you guys help them prepare them for that also in a way, like this cultural shift. Yeah. Do players ask you now? Because they know you played there, and like when they go overseas instead of NBA.
Yeah, when they come to the time where they'll ask questions. Just, and I just try to, you know, help them, you know, from my experiences of you know, playing in Germany, playing in Italy, things to look for, how to approach being a professional. So yeah.
Mm. Man, Dom, I look at our notes and we already asked a lot.
It does not stop, Dom.
Okay, you have anything more?
Yeah, a little bit going back to the assistant coach role. What I wanted to ask is if you now had to decide, you know, you were a player back then in Europe at college, and now you're an assistant coach. What do you prefer, sitting in a video room as a player or assistant coach?
Oh man, I go back and forth. I love the competitive aspect as a player. I would try to take what I know now to be better. But I also love like being, when I tell you, a lot of people don't have jobs they really love. Like I love, besides losing, obviously, but you still learn from losing. I love the every day of practice, every day of helping these young men be better. And then when they come back, it's like you get this, I don't know, it's something special about coaching. And I get paid to coach. Like that's kind of, it's pretty cool. And I get to coach at Villanova, one of the, if not the best college in basketball, for the one of the best, if not the best coach. So very, you know, very grateful and honored and blessed, you know.
And is there something that gives you a little bit of security? For example, you know, in my situation as a strength and conditioning coach, you know, when we finished a practice week and we had like great practices, I had a good lift, and then, you know, we would play, everything would turn out, you know, we just wouldn't show up. Then you have practice weeks where you're like, oh man, this was a horrible practice week. I just don't have a good feeling about the upcoming game. All of a sudden, they play their best basketball ever. So for me, I always come back to the same thing. It is so unpredictable. And whenever I go into a game, I'm like, even if we have a good or like a bad practice week, I'm like, you just simply never know how they're going to show up. Is there something that gives you like some sort of security or?
Yeah, like you said, it's so unpredictable. You never know. You can have the best practice and then you get to the game. It could be an injury. The team you're playing against could just have the best performance and shoot three. So, like for us, we just try to prepare like a certain way. Like we try to be like, there's announcers and play people and coaches in our business that joke about our Villanova players. Like you guys are like machines, you're robots. So, and the hardest thing is that for these kids in college, they're 18 and 22. You have no idea like their emotions of balancing basketball at the highest level. Girls, strength and conditioning, lifting weights, academics, like you just have no idea. So, but we just try to, all right, whatever you're doing, let's give it your all and let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm. I think in my world, I think the mindset the players get and the, like you said, all the emotions, how they handle it, that's probably the part where you can the best predict how that game is going to go.
Right.
So do you guys work with mental coaches or however you want to call it?
We used to in the past, not so much anymore. We always tell them, like, if you need to speak with someone, we offer that. Cause some kids like to, you know, get their thoughts out and not with a coach, someone else, another different outlet. So we do offer that, but, we had a few situations, but, we don't make it mandatory, no.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I mean, there's one more thing. I'm just, you know, my head is full of topics I would like to touch on.
Yep.
Because I'm really interested in your perspective on that. We once had a volleyball pro coach, professional coach on here, and he said that you need, as a coach, you need to kill the player inside you first. So I'm very interested in how you see that. Have you ever heard about that, or
is he still alive, or is he dead already?
No, can you
just asking for a friend?
Can you explain what that means? What did he mean by that?
I think back then, Leonard, you have to also help me out a little bit with that. I think back then we asked him because he was also a player before, professional volleyball player, and now he's a coach.
Yes.
And we back then asked him if that helps him now, if that sometimes stands in the way, and he then came back to us with the saying, in order to be a good coach, you got to kill the player. And yeah, like I just said before,
kill the player inside.
I think it's like the mindset also, because I remember I tried to coach earlier and I wanted to play myself. Like the player in me was still so much alive that I couldn't coach, that I couldn't take this, let's say, more passive role, because I wanted to be active.
Yeah.
Does that make it a little bit clear?
Yeah. So I don't know the coach's background, but for me, I try to use my experiences as far as the good, the bad, how I approach the game, and use that to my advantage. I try to be a killer at all times. So on an off day, did I like to go in a gym still? Did I like to try to think of how I would like to prepare, or how would I like to go over a scout as a player? All right, what did I really like? What can I take from that? And then also knowing your personnel, your players, like I said, you could draw it on the board and know exactly, but you have some players, like if you go too fast, you got to know, or you draw it a certain way, they're going to do it exactly. So you have to, so I like to keep that player
alive
a little bit, for me personally, mm-hmm. but you know, every person has their different philosophies and how they approach things, alive a little bit, to see how I could help the next player be better than the player that I was, and mentality was. And I have a little bit of advantage playing at Villanova because I went to a Final Four here. So I could tell, like, you're looking at, hey, I did it. So there's no way you're going to tell me like you can't, like you can't do it. Like I've done it. I'm telling you how to do it and how to approach it. And you can be better than me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I really like that perspective.
Yeah.
I really like that. But I think it's like you said, very individual in how much you self-worth you put in your career and how much you took out of that and like this small stuff. Maybe we should call this, like we called that episode, I think, back in the day, kill the player inside. And now we keep that one alive, man. Keep it alive.
Yeah, I think if I remember correctly, he back then meant it a little bit in the way that, you know, he didn't want his former self as being a player to be a distraction to him as being a coach. Mm-hmm. I think something
he was very
like
emotional
that.
Too, I think. He was a very emotional player, and I think it ended on injuries. And, you know, I think it's different with you. You just took a different path, like you said earlier. You know, you ended it on purpose, let's say, even earlier because you wanted this other path of career. So I think that's why it might be a different perspective, probably.
Right, right. Yep.
Leonard, I have one last one if you don't have anything.
All right. It's up to Dwayne, man. I could talk for hours.
Ready to rock.
That's also a very interesting one, I think. You know, is there a certain behavior by a head coach that bothered you in the past as a player that you find yourself doing today as well?
Yes, we stole that question from you.
Man. Did I do myself?
Or did you, I don't know, that caught, that,
I
you
think
know,
I would be,
where
I would,
you caught yourself?
I think I would be able to answer this when we do the another anniversary of this, if I'm another guest, when I'm head coach.
For sure. Okay.
Because you do things, like you see the head coach, all right, if I did it this way, this is what I would change. Like as an assistant coach, you give your opinion, but they still make the final say. Mm-hmm. So I would love to know how I would approach certain things as a head coach. And I have a few things in mind, like how we, for example, when I played, when we played a game, the next day we were always off. As a player, that was mentally the best for me. But now I think there's a little bit of science to it where, like if we have X amount of games, usually we have X amount of games where you could take that day off, but they try to squeeze in these games for TV purposes and what now. Now I'm trying to explain this in the best way possible. We like 2 days to prepare for a game. So if we have a lot of days back to back, let's say if we play Saturday and we have offs, I'm sorry, we play Saturday and then we play a game Tuesday. We like to prepare 2 games, 2 days before. Does that make any sense? Mm-hmm. So Sunday, mm-hmm. Monday, and then Tuesday. In my mind, as a player, I would want that day off and not get in the gym and shoot. Forget the term. Like you get in the, we don't do a lot at all. We run over some plays, we shoot, and we lift to get something out of your legs. There's like a strength coach terminology for it.
Yeah.
So as a player, I'm like, what? I would not like that. But it's we've won championships doing that. So that's something I can't wait to cross when I'm a head coach. Mm-hmm. Any as a strength and conditioning coach, any thoughts on?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely something, some active recovery, I would say. Even, you know, I it's pretty individual to each player. I have players on our team right now who love doing this. Like after a game, they love to come in and do something to get the organism going a little bit. There are other players who are like, nah, not really my thing. So it's tough to answer.
What would you say to this? So as far as the I hope this is not offensive. I'm very direct, I love to know the answers. What would you say if you made this mandatory and not all players like the active recovery? I think in your field, it's beneficial, it's good. My response to that would be, and I don't know what you did career wise. I played at almost the highest level. Like I played, and I just personally, I guess it's different for each person. Like mentally and physically, I feel better when I have a completely off and I'm more fresh. But science,
I absolutely, yeah.
But science might say otherwise.
I think it's what you said mentally, because that's a different thing, and that's on a different page. Like you can. Body-wise, okay, it makes sense. I guess Dom could probably prepare all the papers you need to read, and then he could prove, okay, your body recovers, your muscles recover better when you do something the next day. But I think it's also here, like getting your head off the game. Maybe you had a bad game, or you're not trying to get too high on a good game, and like need to be calm. And I think that's where it gets super individual, and then it doesn't, like these 5-10% that Dom could prove, maybe mentally it's a lot more worth as a player than this physical
thing. I think there's the term, and this is the fact that players are just there are inter-individual differences, of course. Everybody has like a different biography. Everybody did things differently. I think the best approach of this, you shouldn't make it mandatory, but you know, if somebody wants to come in and wants to get something done, I'm there. Yeah. And if somebody feels better by just having a complete day off, hey, that's, and then in the end, that's autonomy again. Huh? And I think that's where we're heading these days. Anyway, so the time is over, that the strength coach is standing in front of the team and is like, okay, guys, let's go. Everybody does this 3 sets of 5 and here we go. That time is just over. And I hope we're getting away from this. Right. That's, I like the autonomy thing a lot, that players can choose what feels best for them.
Right. Right. Gotcha.
Mm. Yeah. I like to, it's like I started reading about this theory of people in health, seeing people as biologically, psychologically, and socially, like all these three aspects. And I think that all plays together. And if you focus too much on one, yeah, I think you lose some percent, let's say,
right,
of health.
Right.
All right, man. One last question, and we will leave you alone. Do you have anybody that you can think of and that you can hook us up with who you think would be interesting on this podcast, who could provide us with some brain pops like you did?
Oh, man. So that's a good question. Do you have a list?
We have a huge list. Yeah. We have names on there. Like somebody said LeBron James, and we're like, yeah, how?
Well, if you have a list of that I could possibly help. No.
Or that. We send you the list and you pick one that you can hook us up with.
If I can, yes. Yes.
Okay.
How about
okay,
that?
Okay, let's try it. Let's try that. That's a good deal.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you could choose without us hooking up, who would you like to listen to on a podcast?
Oh, that's easy. You know the answer to that question. Lil Wayne.
I don't.
Lil Wayne. Ah, Wheezy. There we are at your nickname. Yeah, I think that's a wrap now. Yeah, now we made the whole circle, man. We got it all. Thank you so much for being here, man. I really... like I said, I could go on for hours. I thank you for carving out the time. I know you have a tough schedule, and we wish you all the best for the upcoming season. You are in the season, yeah. Obviously.
Yes. Yeah, 3 more games left, and then the March Madness. But yeah, it was a pleasure speaking with both you guys and just learning from you guys, and hopefully I was able to help you guys. And
Yes, big time.
And Leonard, man, you're a little brother, man. I'm always there for you if you need anything. I hope you know that. And you better come visit soon, man.
Yes, yes. As soon as these COVID times are over, I'm there. I appreciate it. And yeah.
All right. And ciao.
Thank you very much.
Dankeschön. And I want to say hello to all the Gottian fans. I really miss you guys. You guys were very important in my development and growth. And one of the best time of my basketball career was with you guys.
It's all love, man. They still talk about you. You're still in their minds.
All right, man. Ciao.
Bye-bye.
And here we are in the usual after show where Dom and I let the episode rewind a little bit and share our brain pops with you guys. You know, for any new listeners out there. Yeah, man, it's been almost a week since we recorded with the A. And yeah, I had a lot to think about during this episode, but maybe do you want to start, Dom, or should I?
No, I can. I can start. That's fine. A few things I really liked. The first thing where I was like, "Oh, that's interesting," is the way how he prepares for games, and that he has this like, I don't even know how he called it in the episode. It's like his like personal accent to his preparation, that he wants to be, you know, at the end of preparing for an upcoming game, he wants to feel like the coach of the other team. Mm-hmm. So that's something that he, you know, sets up for himself all the time, and I think that's just a great thought. I have never thought about it like that.
Yeah, if he can put himself in the shoes of the opposing coach, I guess that means he's enough prepared.
And I think he also said that he wants to get a feel on how the other team, for example, also subs and stuff. So he just basically wants to get a feel of the other coach. That's kind of cool, looking at it from this perspective. That's what I really liked. And I've never heard that before, that somebody has this kind of approach.
Mm. Yeah, and then adding to that, like what he meant by, you know, it's one thing that he knows. It's one thing that all the coaches know. It's one thing that they have a great scouting report, but in the end, it matters what information comes across to the players.
Yep.
And I found that was one thing that I found really interesting on how he approaches that. You know, obviously they will have the video and the way they put that information into context and stuff is very important. But also he said, you need to build good relationships. And that was key to me. Because if you have that, you know, you can really bring across the information and they can interpret it their way, and you can still come to the same conclusions in the end. But that needs to be like on the basis of a good relationship, and that's how he wants to approach it. And that was really, really interesting to me. Also, a coach knowing that and approaching this transfer of information like that.
Yeah, that's a good point too. I agree with you.
Yeah, and that just like, and that really struck me afterwards. Again, even though I kind of knew this, how like Dwayne is, I think, one of the most intelligent people to me socially and emotionally. Like he has such an intelligence there, such a sensibility for people, how to build relationships. And I think that's the key factor that will make him a great head coach one day.
Yeah, I think he has, that's what I also thought while listening to him. He has, in that regard, what you just said, I think he has very good instincts.
Yes, absolutely. Like he probably wouldn't describe it in any fancy word, but he doesn't need to because he just does it naturally.
Yeah.
What else?
At the end, I have the feeling we always come back to this on this podcast, but I think once we stopped recording, we had a good talk on the phone right away after the episode.
Absolutely.
And it was about, again, about the autonomy thing, huh? Can you?
Yeah, the episode was kind of over, and then we kind of just open it right back up. And I found that really interesting, what he asked and what you said there.
Yeah, it was basically, I mean, we know by now that this, you know, that coaches should give their athletes, choices, so to speak. This is the one part of it. I think it's good in general that, you know, athletes can take ownership. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Responsibility. Yeah.
Responsibility. But as a coach, and this is maybe the, I don't know if it's a negative. You just have to be aware of it. You just have to, you know, observe it a little bit, because obviously you don't want your athletes that they, you know,
slack.
Use it. Like,
yeah.
You know, that they use it in the wrong way. Yeah. And that's a little bit where you as a coach, I think, have to observe. And if that happens, you obviously have to interfere a little bit.
Yeah, but, you know, the way they recruit, especially at Villanova, I don't think they really have problems with that, probably, since, you know, that's what they really look for. He really stressed that, you know, and then also it brings me back to the episode with Devin, where we said, you know, you need to learn some level of discipline before you can handle this, let's call it now, autonomy or freedom.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good point. And again, that's also something that I always try, you know, I would say it's sort of my philosophy, you know, I just want to create an environment for the athletes where they can work in and where they can make their own experiences. And yeah. If they help me, if they need help, then I will, of course, help them.
That's definitely the perfect world, that they come to you asking you for help. You know,
exactly.
That's in the perfect world. That's how it would be. Obviously, you know, reality is kind of different, and you know, other circumstances come into that. But yeah, I think that's what you should definitely aim for.
And again, I think that takes time in the end. Huh? So
yeah,
it's, you have to build trust, of course. And again, it comes back to having a good relationship. So.
Man, I guess you got to go to college, man. Since in college you would have a longer, let's call it, grip on the players to build that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe the last thing that I wanted to mention is the recruiting process. I found that really, really interesting, the way he described that Villanova wants to do that. And when I talked to him afterwards, that was even something that he said he kind of wanted to stress more, because Villanova really, really is in touch with the families and really makes a big, let's call it, commitment there. And that's really really makes sense to me, the way he explained it. You know, the parents grew up, drove their kids to the gym, and, you know, like, saw them every day. And then they kind of got to hand them over, let's call it, to the college. And obviously, they have to trust you so the parents can let go. Because if the parents don't let go, the players won't have this autonomy that we were just talking about. Because they're still like, you know, that's what I was saying during the episode with this social part, you know. You got to have the freedom first before you can use it, you know. Or you have to take it. And Villanova really takes a big part in that. And it helps the players and the families to, you know, keep their relationship alive. And still, you know, the parents know that the player is in good hands. And the player also gets in touch with responsibility, and then we're at the beginning of this after show again.
Yeah, that's a very good train of thought.
Yeah, man, awesome.
Another one
in the books, episode 50. Really special guest to me. I love how I can connect this podcast with chopping it up with old really good friends. I like this about this episode. But yeah, man, shout out to you, just like I said in the pre-show, for handling this for 50 episodes. And let's hope we have 50 more in coming.
Yeah, I'm pretty positive that I can keep handling it. All right.
Yeah, another great guy. Another great episode for me personally. I hope the poppies liked it too. If you have any thoughts, any brain pops, let us know.
Exactly.
On social media or whatever. And see you in 2 weeks.
With another one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, one last thing. This was the last episode of season 2 of Brain Pops. Dom and me are going to take a short break and regroup and think of a new guest list for new Brain Pops to get in season 3. Yeah, we're debating where we want to head in season 3, so it's still very open. We might open up to some new sports, some positions in the professional sports that we haven't listened to. So if you guys have any ideas, let us know, shoot us a message, maybe even a wish for a guest. We will try to make it happen. And if not, also no problem. We will come up with a plan, and that's what you guys got to stick with then. And we hope you guys enjoy this format. We definitely do, and we're going to keep going. So see you guys soon, and have fun with these Brain Pops.